Tilehurst End Podcast.
By Reading fans, for Reading fans.
Hello everyone, welcome along to a special edition of the Tilehurst End Podcast. Unfortunately, our usual traditional format hasn't taken place this week. Unfortunately, with such a tight turnaround between the first leg and the second leg of the playoffs, not been able to rustle up a full studio. But what we decided to do was hop onto YouTube with myself and Mark and answer your questions live. So what you will hear is our live reaction to people joining in on the YouTube channel at youtube.com/TileHurstEnd as we give our thoughts on that first leg draw at Craven Cottage and what we think may happen, hopefully, and will happen. I say will happen. Go on. Why not? We'll get to Wembley. Let's get the optimism out of the way. Anyway, you will hear all of our detailed thoughts on that second leg at the Wodeski Stadium over the next 40 minutes or so. Hopefully you enjoy it. We will be back with a proper full edition of the podcast after the second leg, no matter what happens, whether it's an end of season debrief or a look ahead to Wembley, we will be back. So please keep thoughts coming in, as always, to at the Tilehurst End on Twitter, thetilehurstend@gmail.com or facebook.com/thetilehurstend. And as always, thank you to everyone who contributes via our Patreon crowdfunding campaign at patreon.com/thetilehurstend. That's patreon.com/thetilehurstend. It's our electronic tip jar. It's how we grow. It's how we buy new equipment. It's how we try new things. Without your support, those sort of things can't happen. You know, we don't get a lot of money in here. We do really rely pretty much on the kind generosity of you guys out there. So if you like what we do, just a thank you. Or if you want to see us buy new things and if you've got suggestions, improvements, please get them into us as always and join in. Anyway, in the meantime, here is myself and Matt Mayo with our Tilehurst End Podcast live special.
The Tilehurst End Podcast.
Read the blog
on thetilehurstend.com.
Hello out there. Welcome to a very special Tilehurst End Podcast. You may notice that the studio behind me is rather empty this week. That would be because we are conducting this here show over the magic of YouTube, and he may not be in the studio, but he kind of is Mr. Mark Mayo. Mark, hello, in that little corner there, how are you?
Yeah, it's all good over here. I'm not actually too far away from you, but I suppose we're both in the same sort of town, so we're still technically doing it as we usually are.
Repping some Woodley pride over here. I am Dan Wimbush, by the way. Thank you very much for taking the time to tune in. I said it's something new for us. It's not how we usually do this, so we're going to do it on the fly. Basically, as you can see, Mark is there. We didn't really have a chance to get anybody else on the show. Just short notice, and just one of those nights where everybody seems to be busy. So what we thought we'd do, we thought we'd hop on YouTube, record a show, and just talk about that first leg at Fulham. Mark, the biggest burning question of all, were you happy coming away with that 1-1 draw at Craven Cottage on Saturday?
Yeah, I was, especially with the way the game panned out and everything, and taking the lead was very important, so it meant that we annoyed Fulham as much as anything. We got on their backs, and we weren't a pushover, and we showed that. I think a lot of the build-up, and I'm not going to too much get into the whole like pundits, etc. sort of idea, but a lot of the build-up was on the basis that Fulham were the favourites, and we showed that we're just as good as them, if not better.
Absolutely. I think I walked down to the ground, and I was saying, if we can keep this within a goal, I will be absolutely delighted. So to come away with a draw, I keep wanting to say a point, but it's not a point. To come away with level terms is fantastic. I should say at the front, I was very lucky to go. You might have listened to the podcast last week and heard myself and you, Mark, saying we were unlucky not to get tickets. I was very fortunate. A listener, Nick, I won't give his second name away just in case he doesn't want to be identified, but he's a regular listener to the show. He heard my plight. And was kind enough to offer up some spares. It wasn't just me, it enabled somebody else from the Tilehurst End to go as well. We had to hold a lucky draw for that. And I was fortunate enough to be at Craven Cottage for one of the great away days, Mark, that really reminds you, you know, why you go and follow football. The heart-pounding excitement going into the game, the absolute nerves. I have one of these watches that tracks my heart rate, and I looked in the moments before kickoff, and it was up around 100 beats per minute. I was surprised it wasn't setting off some sort of medical alarm along the way. But I mean, what was this? Was this a fair result on the day? Because there's been a lot of Fulham chatter saying, "Oh, Reading killed the game, negative, yada yada yada." Do we deserve the point or the draw? The draw. I keep saying point. The draw.
No, I think we did, because there's two sides to the game. There's the attacking side and the defensive side. And I think even in the midfield, I thought we were well represented. We battled well. We took a lot of the 50-50s. And I don't think the refereeing played much of a part in the actual outcome of the game. So when it comes to luck, and obviously Reading, we've talked about being lucky quite a few times this season, I don't pick any moments out and say, that was when they were lucky, or that was when they were lucky. Fulham didn't have a shot on target, I don't think, until the second half. So it's not as if we were getting away with things. We were probably the better side, certainly defensively, until their goal, when we had one. You know, I think there were a couple of errors in that goal that, you know, that comes when you're under so much pressure. But the fact that we only conceded once from a back foot sort of mentality is always good.
Yeah, absolutely. And just take the time to welcome everyone who's following us live. Nice to see a few people join in with a live chat. We've got Dan Goodfellow. James Short says, you're right, fellas. Willie Cullis, watching in Yorkshire. Andy Walker says, good evening. Pete Froud is here as well, as is Simi Pickup. Bucks Royal. Jamie Westcar is here as well. And he's asked, can I turn you up, Mark? So I will duly oblige and turn you up that little bit more. Just wanted to drown you out like a good away fan does to a home fan.
You were complaining before we went on air that I was too loud.
So. You were in my ear. You were really buzzing loud, but apparently out there you're a little bit quiet. So hopefully I've turned you up now so people can hear you nice, loud and clear. But we'll go back to the start of the Fulham game then. Lineup wise, did Yapstam get the formation right? Did he get the team selection right? Were there any surprises for you?
Yeah, well, I was pretty happy with how things were set up. We were talking last week about the fact that we kind of wanted that five at the back, didn't we? That was always the key to stopping Fulham, certainly, because we knew that they were going to, you know, pull out the flanks, and we needed the three men in the middle to deal with that as well. Yeah. And I think Obita was certainly, and Gunter deserves praise as well for the way they played, to make that five-man defence work. So, yeah, I was happy with how everything was set up. I was happy with the fact that it was, obviously, Kelly was injured, but Evans and Williams in the midfield provided the kind of stability with the fight, etc. Swift was the one who I was kind of disappointed with, but then I was perfectly happy to put him in the lineup at the start of the game, so I don't have any qualms with that.
Yeah, there wasn't really a lot of other options for that sort of attacking midfielder slot. I suppose you could have moved Williams further forward, but then you would have had to play a Vandenberg. I thought he got the team selection spot on. I did have a few concerns with Tyler Blackett in there to start with, but credit to him, it was one of his best games, if not his best game, in a Reading shirt. I thought the whole back five were magnificent throughout that. I thought George Evans put in a good shift. Danny Williams in particular was a man possessed, flying in with the tackles. I joked on Twitter, this was a game of FIFA. He was just hitting that slide tackle button, really getting into him from the off. And this was a game where we did worry, you know, has Stam learned from previous away hammerings? Has he got it in him to be pragmatic and play for that result? And I think for the first time this season, really, that I can remember, you could see that was the plan. It was keep it tight. He sort of abandoned his usual mantra of, I'm going to attack and try and score goals and let you deal with it. This one, he realised, I've got to keep us in the tie. Clearly told his players to go out and disrupt Fulham as much as possible. And that worked to a treat. Now, we've seen, again, from the Fulham point of view, a lot of them complaining about time wasting and Reading's gamesmanship. John Swift booked in the first half for time wasting from our own corner. I have never seen that in 22 years following Reading. Was that the right decision? Was he taking that long?
No, it was a home fan sort of thing. If it would have been a Fulham player taking that long, you wouldn't have heard a peep out of it. So I think it was just the referee didn't quite have the control of the game that he needed at that point. And I think he'd let quite a few challenges go early on, which I was perfectly fine with because Jan Kermigant was making most of them. But it was a sense of he kind of had enough and he wanted to make a statement as opposed to anything being a really bad moment, as it were.
Yeah, I mean, what did you make of the refereeing overall? For me, again, I've heard a lot of pops at Stuart Atwell saying, oh, he didn't have a great game. I didn't think he had a particularly bad game. I don't say it was a magnificent game. There are a few inconsistent moments where you thought, yeah, okay, maybe that's a booking, maybe that's not a booking. But generally, did you think he got most things right?
Yeah, as I say, I like the fact that it was a relatively lenient approach at the start of the game because it's a playoff final, or semi-final. You say that players can't play the occasion, but I think referees kind of do have to play the occasion and know that it's going to be a feisty 180 minutes. There's no point making a rod for your back and booking players early on. The McShane red card, I don't have any qualms with. I think it's a little bit unfortunate, but it's a red card nonetheless. So, yeah, I think Atwell did as much as he could. And I think the players were also relatively good in that they didn't get in his face too often, which is quite important for him.
Yeah, the only bit was I was slightly disappointed with the overreaction of the Fulham players to the McShane tackle. I was going to come on to it later, but as it's been brought up, we'll come on to it now. You say fair red card. It was directly in line with me when it happened, and I thought he's gone for that. It looked wild. It looked high. I don't think it was malicious, though, from McShane. For me, it was a tired lunge from a player that was only playing his second 90 minutes in a couple of months, and I'm just gutted for him that he's going to miss not just the second leg, but potentially the final and the first game or first two games of next season.
Yeah, it's a disappointment. In terms of Reading, I think we'll probably be okay because centre-back we're well stocked in. And also McShane's been missing for a large amount of the season anyway, so we should be able to get away with it. As for McShane himself, yeah, I feel gutted for him because he's been out for a lot of the season, as I just said. And it wasn't a typical sort of McShane tackle.
No,
you don't actually see him lunging in a lot. And not like, you know, get away from the nonsense of whether he's that type of player. He's a centre back, so he does love a tackle. But he's not always getting booked, is he? He's not always.
I think it's his first red card in 6 years, I think I read, other than the bizarre weird one at Middlesbrough. Although did I can't even remember if he got sent off for that for fighting with Danny Williams, but seems a lifetime.
No, I don't think he did.
He got a ban for it, didn't he? But he didn't get sent off.
It was retrospective. But I do think that he's gutting for him, but I do think that the club should be okay for it.
Yeah, right, let's hit the comments section because it's great to see so many people there. Willow asks, could losing McShane be a blessing in disguise? He got done for pace at right back.
With Ilori's pace, and a couple of people have mentioned Ilori's pace, and I said to you before the game that I'd have Ilori in at centre back perfectly happily. So he's, you know, the McShane's leadership is very key, and what we've seen with Fulham is that I think they lacked a lot of leaders, but McShane can be replaced in a footballing sense very comfortably.
Yeah, we've kind of gotten used to not having him for the last 2 months. I don't want to call that a blessing in disguise, but you know, Burton in the first leg with the first two games he'd played since March, so we found a way to win without him, even if we've had a few calamities on the way, like at Curragh Road. But yeah, I mean, Ilori on paper, his pace is a much better matchup. It's just a case of how fit he is. You could even say possibly Joe Vandenberg's a better fit, but that'll be interesting to see. Buxrall is playing the Joker. He's saying Sandro Vesa for advanced playmaker. What a time to make your Reading debut. Yeah,
he could be the... we think Joseph Mendes has come out of nowhere, but Sandro Vesa would really... up front with Danzel Gravenberch as someone who could come on and just make the absolute... the biggest impact ever, kind of like a Yakubu.
Yeah, well, why not? Yakubu did one magic thing.
It's been done.
Exactly. James Short says, I'm so nervous for tomorrow. You're not the only one. Willow, again, Williams should be that intense all the time. Sim reckons Stam got his tactics and selection spot on. The Swift booking was utterly ridiculous. Let's move on. Andy Walker does say he reckons we were time-wasting. Pete Frowes has been our big players to step up. I don't think you'll have any disagreements with that. A couple of comments on the ref as well. Sim says Atwell was weak and inconsistent throughout the match. And Dan Goodfellow says ref was very good in my opinion. What do you think about the red? We've covered that. And James again says definite red, sadly, as well. So I'll come back to a few of those. I'll just go on to Willow as well. So it was a bad tackle. We would have called that, for that to be a red if it was one of our players as well. So yeah, we'll try and get to as many comments as you can. But obviously you're streaming in with them. So we'll do our best to catch up. But let's move on. First half, not a great affair. Fulham do have those few chances. Couple they really should bury. One in particular, I think it was from... oh, I can't remember who the Fulham player was now. His sister, Aluko. I was going to say his sister plays football.
Yeah.
Sonny Aluko.
There's Aluko one.
That's it. Sonny Aluko slots narrowly wide. Reading don't actually register an entire shot in the first half. And usually you'd be up in arms about this, but again, just didn't matter at all. Come out of the trap second half. And Reading get the goal. Now, the contentious bit about this Reading goal is, was it... well, there's no disagreement here. Danny Williams had his hands on the ball. Everyone can see that. But was it a deliberate handball and should a foul have been blown for?
No, I don't think so. I think that if... I'm kind of a reminder, if it's in the penalty area or something like that, then a handball that changes the influence of the game in such as it moves it or like away from the goal, for example.
Yeah.
If it's on the goal line and it's kind of not deliberate, then I would still give it. But when it's out in the middle of play, I think there's a lot more leniency. And I think Williams, he's... I don't know if he's being fouled, but there's a lot of physical contact in there. Yeah. So it's not as if he's flopped on the ball himself. So he's, you know, he's influenced the route with the ball, but it's while he's falling over. You can say that it was because he thought there was a foul or because he was trying to grab the ball or whatever, but in the speed of the game, I think the referee has more than his right to just wave play on there.
Yeah, McShane dances through, plays a lovely ball out wide, and Jordan Obita, second goal in as many games. We had a comment on Twitter in advance of the show from Laura Rule saying Obita scored two consecutive goals in off the post, proves his Burton goal was deliberate. Well, who am I to argue?
that is logic.
Absolutely. I thought he had an absolutely fantastic game. I know Will, who did our match report and player rating, said the same in the further reading column as well. Obita becoming a man. Was that his very best performance you've seen in a Reading shirt?
Yeah, I think so, because we've seen a couple of performances where you could say, oh, he's picked out a good ball here, or he's made an influence. So he's played at centre mid well quite a few times when he was younger, and I think we're all very impressed with that. But when you look at his discipline, the way that he tracked Fulham, who were so dangerous down the wings, like, we can't really underestimate that too much, especially the fact that they scored their goal from the opposite wing for a defensive lapse. They could have scored four goals with four defensive laps if, you know, you tally it up in a way. So I do think it was a really important performance from him. I think his way of adapting to that left back, left wing back sort of role, again, it shouldn't be something that we can kind of underestimate, because it is so hard for a player who, we've seen it with like Robson Kanu, the mentality of a player who wants to be playing further up the pitch but has to do the dirty work role. And in further reading, I said interestingly that his passes weren't the sort of nice tippy-tappy passes that we've done before. They were the pragmatic, get it over the top, get it away kind of balls. And for a player to do that who is quite young and who has, as I say, all the positional, etc., things, I do think it was a really good performance and a really big stage as well.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just such, it's almost ironic then that he puts in such a fine performance, gets injured at the end. Now, the news on him is mixed. Yap said after the game, he was carried off on a stretcher, but Yap said after the game it was a twisted ankle. Now, I've had only very minor twisted ankles in my life, nothing as severe as I'm sure what Jordan's been through, but as most people reading this and watching this, listening will know, they can be nasty things. And especially with such a tight turnaround, he's got, 72 hours just under to turn that around. Might be one of those Football Manager style pain-killing injections to get him through the game. Or is it a risk? If Obita is 75%, even if he's 90% fit, is this a game where you have to be 100% fit to play?
No, I mean, I don't think it is necessarily, because these games change quickly, and obviously it's very demanding, but it's demanding mentally more than physically, I think, unless it goes to extra time and penalties, in which case you've seen countless times players walking wounded through extra time and it kind of kills the game on itself or can obviously help the opposition. But I think it's more, I would risk him in that sense, because firstly, your alternative at left back is Tyler Blackett, and I don't think he's as good a left back, and he's not going to do that job. And secondly, we've got 13 days after the second leg before the final. So, you know, best comes to best, he has a lot of time to recover from any problems before the final, at least.
What is your, well, we'll move on then to look at the teams for the second leg. Actually, no, before I do that, I want to get your thoughts very quickly on the Fulham equaliser. Because for all of Reading's hard work and defensive, this just looked like a minute where they just switched off. Just let the extra runner come through. Where does the blame lie? Because some people are pointing at the finger at Al Habsi. Others are saying the midfield trackers. Others are saying the defence. Is there someone to blame, or is it a bit of everything? Not that I'm trying to play the game here.
The first thing that I saw was, like, I looked at it in the replay and I thought Williams was about 5 yards too far forward. He'd lost his man. And then you look at it and you think, actually, I don't really see where Chris Gunter's at in it. And then the ball comes in. You think, oh, where are the centre-backs? And then Al Habsi completely flaps at it. So it's all of the above, really, isn't it? You can't say, oh, it wasn't Al Habsi, but it was Williams, because, you know, it's very hard to argue that.
Yeah, it's one of those annoying goals where you look at it and there's two or three different points where you think, well, it should be stopped there. You know, the cross, should it have been blocked? Should there have been someone marking Kearney? Should Al Habsi have had a stronger arm? It's one of those things where it's just like, oh, nobody's committed a cardinal sin in the build-up to that goal, but every, you know, there's two or three different areas where you go, you should have done better there. I suppose in a way that's a better goal to concede than an absolute howler. But still, you would have liked to have made Fulham work that little bit harder. From that point, I said, not too many chances either way, actually. I mean, Reading had a couple of really nice little breakaways. If Jan Kermgren somehow managed to stay on his feet with a lovely little
ball in. And that
shot he had
from 25 yards.
Oh, yeah. That lobbed just onto the roof of the net. So not too many.
That would have been quite the moment.
Yeah, just a bit. I think the carnage in the away end that we saw for the first goal would have just been multiplied by about 5,000 if that had gone in. But what did you make of Fulham in all before I move on to this second leg? Were they as impressive as, you know, the hype around them was, and, you know, the bookmakers making them favourite for this? Did you think that they lived up to their side of the bargain?
At the start, I thought they were really rickety. I thought we started so much better. I thought by about 25 minutes, they'd grown into the game and they had their kind of wobble, as it were. I thought they were decent towards the end of the first half. We spoke about the fact that Kearney scored. I thought it was actually a really good time for Reading to concede, because it wasn't like the end of the first half when I think they'd have got a lot of momentum. It was too late, or too early rather, for them to really give it a proper go.
Yeah.
And yet too late for them to still have the impact of like having a whole half of it, etc. So I thought that they weren't quite up to their 100%. And you could see Jokanović on the sideline was quite annoyed throughout. I think he was expecting more. I don't think they produce those kind of moments of quality that their play relies on, and Andy Walker in the comments saying they had no plan B, and that is that's true. I think in the playoff they're less likely to go into their plan B, given that it's the first leg. But as I say, their moments of quality, those kind of individual touches of class that you need for those for that style of play, just wasn't coming through.
Absolutely. And just a word, Dan Goodfellow says, I feel sorry for Mendes getting on, then like 10 minutes later he gets taken off again. He was a consummate pro. I did a quick post show with Will on the way back, and he said, you know, Mendes knew he was going to come off and sort of went to the very far side of the pitch sort of to eat up those few seconds. So he seems like a good lad. He's been one of the nice stories of the last couple of months, Mendes. He's really sort of won me over, not just with his goals, but he just seems to be a player. I'd sort of written him off as one of these players that perhaps comes to a club and doesn't really fit in and sort of gives up. But no, he's knuckled down. And I absolutely... I love the guy now. So he's a bit of a cult hero. If he, you know, especially if he scores the winner in the next leg. Right, let's move on to this second leg. We've covered most of the first game. We've had lots of questions in the comments about tactics, who would play who. We put our teams together before we recorded this, so I will float them on up here. This is your team, Mark, for the second leg. You can't see it in front of you, but I can see it. You've got a...
I've actually got the YouTube on, but I think it's about 20 seconds delayed behind us.
Oh, well, there you
us,
go. So absolutely. Well,
I'll see it in 15 seconds time.
For the benefit of those listening on the podcast feed, I'll read out anyway. You've got Ali Ohabsi in goal. You've gone for a 3-5-2. You've got Laurie Vandenberg and Moore in there. You've got Gunter and Blackett. You've got Swift, Kelly and Williams. And then you've got Big Joe Mendes up front with Jan Kermgren. Talk us through the thinking behind that.
Yeah, well, this is on the basis that Obita isn't going to be fit. And I think if that is the case, then our hand is forced in terms of the defence. I wouldn't go for a four at the back because Fulham will play the same way, I believe. I think you've got to approach the game as if it was the first leg again. There's a little bit of a give in that because I've got Kelly in midfield instead of Evans. So a bit more creativity. Hopefully Swift plays better. I'll give him a second chance, as it were. Williams in again. Vandenberg and Ilori effectively as injury cover. There's not really any tactical alternative unless you play four at the back. And then I go for Mendes because I thought Graben had a good game, but I'd rather him come off the bench. I think he's more effective with the late pace.
Absolutely.
Whereas Mendes, I think, because he's more of a target man, a bit more of a big lad, I think he's more of a constant, so you don't get that impact off the bench. And as like I know he's only 9 minutes that he came off the bench, but he didn't really touch the ball at Craven Cottage.
Yeah, I was on a Fulham podcast a little bit earlier tonight, and they were sort of asking me for their theory was that Graben maybe had been taken off to save his legs for the second leg, and I don't think it's that. I think Stan very much saw him as a player that, with Reading being forced so far back, that when we sprung out, they wanted that pace. My theory is that he won't go with Mendes. This is my team. My theory is that he's going to go with Roy Behrens in a sort of a kind of a free roll, just sort of floating behind Kermigan, just looking for that bit of guile, that little bit of creativity, maybe a telling cross. I've kept George Evans in my team. It's John Swift that drops out for me for Liam Kelly if he is fit. Pretty much the same defence. Gone for Blackett at left back with Laurie van den Berg and Moore. Chris Gunter at right back, and then Evans the anchor man with Williams and Kelly in front of him. And then Big Roy behind. Big Jan, because everyone seems to be big when you're talking about football. except for Liam Kelly, bless him. So yeah, that's my team. I've seen a few comments there about, in the comment section now, about Joe van den Berg and his ability to play centre-back. Personally, Mark, I've never had a problem with Joey when he's been part of a three. It's when he's part of a two, like we saw at Old Trafford, that it just all seems to go wrong. Or am I looking at that through rose-tinted, or should that be orange-tinted glasses?
Well, I mean, I agree with you because obviously I put him in the team. I think the thing is with van den Berg is that if you ask him to knock it round at the back, he can look very good, but then he'll make a mistake. And if you ask him to, I would say, think too much. If you say, go and cover that man over there, or go and make a tackle, I think if he thinks too much, then he's not so good. But if he's on a basis of just cover the ground, hold that centre-back position, Moore and Ilori will do the covering because they're more athletic, and then just get the ball out, get it forward. He has a decent amount of vision for someone who would be playing centre-back. So I think he's capable. And yes, he could get sent off. Yes, he can make a stonking error. But I think in a more pragmatic sense, I think he's the good option.
Yeah, I just think it's a game for players that you trust and you know. Now, could Reece Oxford be a better option? Possibly. If he plays on form, he's probably maybe got a higher ceiling. But I think you just go with what you know. And that's why I think you might see a Behrens and you might see a van den Berg, because Stan trusts these guys. And in a one-off game, that's what you want. You don't want to go in there pulling off a ridiculous gamble and it backfiring, because then, you know, it's one of those decisions that just haunts you forever. So I think we'll see a conservative lineup. Lots of people picking the different lineups between the two. Dennis wants to see Mendes in the starting 11. We've got James Short preferring your lineup, Mark, whereas Andy prefers my more defensive lineup. So there you go. And Billal says Blackett was immense at centre back at Cottage. Keep what's working. And that's a good theory as well. You know, Tyler did do so well in that slot. Could you put Ilori in at fullback? We've not seen him there, but he has played there in the past.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't, because you've got to have someone, like, this is the problem with Blackett as well, is that you need someone who really knows his position, because Fulham really test you down those wings. It's something that we haven't actually said here that a few guys are saying in the comments, is that McCleary and Behrens both playing and having like a 5-2-3 or 5-4-1 is another thing that I think Stam is quite possible to go with, so I wouldn't rule that out at all.
Do you see McCleary starting though? I mean, he was on the bench on Saturday, which was a surprise in itself.
Yeah, I don't think it's too much of a surprise, because at his press conference he said that McCleary and McShane were both kind of at the same level. So I think he's it was more of a tactical thing with McCleary. So I think he probably can start. Whether he can do 120, 90 minutes, I don't know, but he could start, I think.
Yeah, I mean, you could see him operating in that slot behind Kermigan. If he doesn't play Beard is in my lineup. But just worry about him getting through 90 minutes. You never know what's going to happen with injuries and things like that. And to play someone that you know is going to struggle just might be too much of a risk. I mean, bringing him on at 60, 75 minutes, depending on how the game situation is one thing. But as I said, you know, you start him and then you lose a couple of players. Look at what happened to Wigan on the final day of the season. You know, do you want to be left with that player who, getting into extra time, you're completely sort of carrying him? I mean, that's without knowing McCleary's fitness levels. I don't know what he's like at the moment. That would be my only concern about him coming straight back into the starting lineup. So we'll have to see how that one goes. But what's the mentality from Stam's team? We saw in that first leg, I said, lots of men behind the ball, lots of hard work, and sort of almost conceding possession a lot of the time and going long at the first sign of trouble. You know, not a problem with me going hoofing it when you're in danger. Much rather that than messing about and conceding a silly goal. But do you think they will try and push out that bit more? Because there will be that onus. I mean, we'll have 23,000 in the Medeski Stadium, 20 plus of them supporting Reading. And they're not necessarily going to be happy with seeing Reading going completely backs to the wall. Nor will the players, I guess. Or will Stam just say, do you know what, forget them, just do exactly what he did in the first leg?
I think when we played the counter attack this season, we've played really well at home. We've not done it enough. And I think that's kind of what they'll do again. And it's kind of why I was just momentarily thinking that they'll play two wingers, is that if we sit back and, you know, Fulham dominate us, I don't think it will worry us too much. If it goes on for too long, then the fans will get on the back. But I think, you know, Reading fans quite often get on the players' back when they're knocking around too much. And what Reading fans, I think, hate seeing more than anything is knocking it around and then making mistakes and conceding goals. And I think that's something that Stam has realised in a way. And I think it's something that if we do it on Tuesday night, we're vulnerable for it, definitely. So I would expect us to, maybe if we're 2-0 up, we'll start knocking around at the back. But I don't think we'll do that from the offset necessarily.
No, I mean, we did see kind of that against Leeds, didn't we? With Reading quite happy to, again, sit back and then spring out. And they had those few, those couple of one-on-ones that Behrens, I think Behrens and McClear, if my memory serves me right, both should have buried. And that was the last real top team we had at the Medeski. So I wonder if he'll be using that as a blueprint, although admittedly Leeds not being quite as possession dominated as Fulham. We'll have to move on then. I'll just read out a few questions from the mailbag that we had in advance of the show, because I said it's not a regular podcast, but we do have the people that email in every week. And if you want to do so, please get involved. You can do so via at the Tarlhurst End on Twitter, thetarlhurstend@gmail.com and facebook.com/thetarlhurstend as well. So lots of ways to get in touch. The people that have done so via email: Jack Killick says, great performance on Saturday, now can't wait for tomorrow night. Hopefully Obita is fit, but if he isn't, would that affect whether you play five at the back or not? Also, how do you think the loss of McShane will be, bearing in mind that Laurie could just come straight in and has looked solid? I think we covered most of those points. And Scott in the States says, esteemed panel, Saturday went better than anyone expected. Should Stam employ the exact same tactics on Tuesday, emphasising defence first for straight Fulham, then patiently looking for a late goal? Is that even possible with McShane and Obita out? So again, I think we've managed to cover those quite well. A couple of people talking about other rogue options in the comments in the YouTube about whether to play Tanoi Watson. He played 90 minutes for the under-23s tonight, so that would seemingly rule him out. Never rule
anything
out. Definitely
rule him out.
Yeah, never rule anything out completely, but yeah, you would certainly think so. The only other rogue thing, I was having a chat with Wim Senior earlier. Do you think it might be a case of he does a bit of a rogue and goes, oh, well, do I put Chris Gunter in on the left?
I don't think so. I think if you put Gunter in at the left, then you put someone who's not an automatic right back in at the right. So I think instead of having one person who's slightly dodgy, you've got two people who are slightly dodgy. And, you know, Gunter, you know, the Wales option obviously gets held against Gunter quite a lot, but he has experience in his big games, and he's going to be captain. So play him, you know, give him that right back slot and say, go and do what you've done before. I've got faith in you. You're my captain. So do what we know you can do. And if he doesn't do it, then he'll know that he's let himself down. And I think he'll do okay. I think he's never played brilliantly for Reading, but I think he'll have a decent enough game, and that'll justify his selection, definitely.
Yeah, again, it goes back to what I said earlier about players you trust. You know, if he goes for the gamble of Gunter at left back and puts a Popper or a McCleary in at right wing back and it all goes horribly wrong, it's just one of those things where I can just see you would just be beating yourself up constantly going, why didn't I just go, you know, round peg and round hole? Why did I try and overthink it? You'd be a little saying, start your cola. That'd be an interesting one. How do you see it going then? This is the key question. Do you think, first of all, do you think it's going to be settled in 90 minutes?
I don't necessarily think it will. If you look at the last two games we played against Fulham, obviously we beat them 1-0 with a last minute penalty being saved. Then we've drawn 1-1, so everything points to another 1-1 draw. It's difficult. If Fulham get a couple of goals, they're more than capable of dealing with us, and you know, I don't necessarily think we'll do very well if we go behind. Same point, if we take an early lead, I think we can more than capable go and get a second quite quickly, and I think Fulham are there for the taking in the sense that they are quite easily demoralised, as we saw how they didn't quite click in the first leg. I think that can happen again. So
Yeah, I would like
to put a 1-0, 2-1 Reading on it, but I think I'd probably have to say 1-1 at this stage.
Yeah, I'm going nowhere near the bookmakers on this game. I just have absolutely no idea. I've sat here and I can make, you know, it's one of those games where you say, oh, well, actually, this could happen. Then, oh, actually, maybe that will happen. And then it's just a case of you basically talk yourself into every possible scenario and result. But look, force me to put a bet on, gamble away. I would probably be going Reading 1-0 with my heart. My head says 1-1 and extra time and penalties. I do think it's one of those games where it could just come down to a shootout. And Lord help both teams. I think both of us have got woeful penalty records this year. And unfortunately, we can't score replays. Replays, rebounds even. I know what I meant. So yeah, it could be there for quite a while. It could be Al Habsi taking a spot kick before you know it.
Yeah, I'm not sure I've ever really seen a Reading penalty shootout before, to be honest. I was trying to think earlier, there's been one against in the League Cup in 2006, I think it was, and then there was one in the League Cup away to Stoke as well. Certainly been no major penalty shootouts for Reading, so it'd be a step into the unknown. But yeah. I mean, Fulham, again, we talk about our penalty record. Fulham had the worst penalty record in the league by just an absolute mile. So it would be typical either way for Fulham to go out or to go through with the penalty shootout. So there's nothing really to say about that other than that if it has to happen, then it happens.
Yeah, the last penalty shootout I can remember of any significance at Medeski was, unfortunately, on September the 11th, 2001. We played West Ham. In the League Cup and managed to get through that. And that was a tense enough occasion. That was just an early round League Cup game. So the thought of going through that in a playoff semi-final, I mentioned my heart rate earlier. I think I'd have to leave the stadium. Not sure I could handle that.
Yeah, there was one. It was Peter Mate scored. Was it Darlington?
Darlington sounds familiar. I'm sure people in the comments section will be frantically typing.
Yeah, we drew 3-3 and then won 4-2 over them with a Peter Mate scored a late equaliser, and then we went on to win.
Did
the
Julian
Joachim
score a hat trick for Darlington that day?
Two, in fact. No, I think is what I've got an old report in front of me at the
Excellent.
Moment. So
Julian
Joachim got two.
Doesn't exist.
The penalties were scored by Stephen Hunt, Glenn Little, Shane Long, and Andre Bique. So.
Oh, amazing.
And then, so that was that, that. I mean, it goes to show that Andre Bique is not necessarily someone I picked to take a penalty. So we were talking the other day, I think, on the podcast about having which five penalty takers you'd have. And I think it does come one of those that comes down to anyone on the day you fancies one. Yeah. And as I say, I don't think it'd be easy for us to predict who would go up for that.
Yeah, I'll finish up with a couple of comments then in the comments section. Willow says, I think Swift will dominate at home. He'll be the creative engine tomorrow. Billow says, Williams at left back. He played right wing back against Brentford, or it might have been Barnsley. I think he did play a couple of games on the right wing back, but again, it's just...
No,
I'm just not a fan of this for this game. Just you know, trying new things. I think it's exactly the wrong time. Yeah, you can say that the whole Sean Cummings on the right at Cardiff worked, but I think that was out of necessity.
Williams
was
so good in the middle at Fulham. Yeah. Don't disrupt that. Just let him do the same thing again. I think this is what we're talking about with having Gunter at left wing back and et cetera, et cetera. Just put people in their best positions and let them do it for 90 minutes. Like, I think it's a very simple thing. You can overcomplicate these things sometimes, and that's certainly a simple thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm asking, where's the BK ripping his shirt off at Burnley gif? If only. I'm not quite mastered it to the extent of like a magically conjure up gifts, although I should have prepared it. But all the mates we said, we've given our thoughts. You've had your say. Thank you very much for joining us here on this live podcast. I apologise, it's not the full podcast as usual. Although in saying that, I don't know what exactly we'd talk about because there's no real news bites to talk about. We've previewed the game. We've analysed the last one. So hopefully you've enjoyed it.
I think the under-23s have lost, haven't they, in their cup final tonight.
Oh, have they?
The only is 2-0 down. I'll just have a quick little look, as such as the live nature of these sort of broadcasts.
Oh, no.
Yes, they did lose in the final away at Swansea. It was 2-0, in fact, away at Swansea. So that's the only news, and that's, you know, it's a little bit disappointing. But
did they get relegated as well?
I think when you spoke to... I think they might have been, yeah. Because Man United got a good result on the final day of the season. But, I mean, this is, I think you spoke to Lee Heron about this, is that whether you actually take these results as important or whether you just take the experience and the everything else. But you can take the fact that, who else? Josh Barrett, Yaku Meite played, Tanner Watson. I would think we can rule any of those players out from playing on Tuesday night.
Just very quick thoughts as well, just while I've got you and a chance before we do. Hopefully a playoff build-up special before it gets lost in the shuffle. A few young players released by Reading this week as well. We saw Craig Tanner, Aaron Cole amongst those released. New contracts for the likes of Zach Jules and Tariq Fosu. Well, they've been offered anyway, they've not signed. Any surprises on either the new contracts offered or those that were released?
No, not too much. I think Zach Jules is one to keep an eye on. I think he's done all right at Motherwell this year. Hasn't always been getting good results, but it's good experience being in the SPFL for a defender. We've seen Michael Hector do very well up there. I'm not surprised that Aaron Cool's left. I know there's stuff going on behind the scenes, we've been told. And there's also some quotes come out today that he said that he's not been allowed to play. So maybe we haven't heard the last of that, but I'm not surprised that like Craig Tanner's going, for example, because I think it's one of those situations where he's not quite as young as we think he is anymore, and it's good for him to go and go to League One, League Two, and get some proper first team football.
Yeah, there comes that cut-off point for every professional footballer, especially young professional footballers, where he gets that 21, 22, and it's... There will be those occasional late bloomers that come through and make an impact. Your Charlie Austins of this world and your Jamie Vardy's. But for every one of those, unfortunately, there's hundreds, if not thousands, that are just never destined for that level. I very much hope that they do. You know, look at Angus McDonald, released from Reading a few years ago. He's back in the Championship, or has been, with Barnsley, and doing really well there. I've seen people like Adam Lockwood, Charlie Austin has mentioned, do it in the past. So people can prove Reading very much wrong, but you've got to, you can only keep a certain amount of people on the books. You might say, oh, well, they're only earning, you know, a grand, say, £1,500 a week, but that soon adds up. You know, you keep three, four of those players on, and, you know, you're talking in the what, quarter of a million, £300,000 range. That might be the difference between signing a player and not. So best of luck to everyone who has been released. Whether Fosu will sign, I don't know. Hopefully he will, but if he doesn't, Reading will at least be guaranteed compensation because they've offered him the deal. That's the crux for these players. They can leave, they're not forced to stay at Reading, but if a club wants them, they have to come to a compensation agreement with Reading. If the two clubs can't agree, it goes to a tribunal and they will set the price based on time they've been at the club, market value, previous examples, stuff like that. So but it remains to be seen. So yeah, best of luck. Cool's the big disappointment, because we saw him come on and in that game against Huddersfield a few years ago, looked really good, had a few other good performances, and obviously did really well for the under-18s and under-21s back then, leading them to that 2014 Cup win. But for whatever reason, it's not worked out. So just happens occasionally, and you have to, you know, dust off and move on. And as Lee said in the interview we did with him, as you mentioned, you know, they've got lots of hungry young players coming through, and you can't have those players blocking them. So it's important to move on from that stage. But anything else before we wrap this up, Mark? Anything else on your mind?
No, I don't think so. I think I will say that I kind of didn't feel very nervous going into the Fulham first leg, and I don't feel particularly nervous going into the second leg at the moment. But I feel that will change very quickly when we get into the stadium and when there's hopefully a full house and everything, and hopefully everyone gets behind it from the first minute. And I think that the fans will stay with the team, and the Fulham fans will hopefully be decent as well. So it'll be a good night, and I don't know, I just fear that early goal might kill us, but then obviously we're more than capable of getting it ourselves, and we've talked about this before, it's an utter coin toss, this game is, isn't it?
Absolutely. And, you know, just don't bring your clappers, Fulham fans, just leave those at home, we don't need them. We've done it before, we're not completely...
They need them, that's the sad thing.
Well, do they? I think they maybe could have come up with a decent, you know, showing if they hadn't had them, but who knows? It stifled it. Willow's final comment here from Willow says, here's one. He'll do the equivalent of Mad Dog Martin Allen putting towels around the pitch tomorrow and getting the ball boys to speed things up. I'm not sure Reading will want to speed things up, but if there's any shenanigans, I don't know, Dave Besant, the man to cause shenanigans, Stephen Reid, who knows? Aldrink, maybe Sir John. Gets John down to
get him out there.
to cause some shenanigans. Sam Jugg says, is it a sellout? I don't think the club have confirmed it is. I think there may still well be a handful of tickets left in the south stand, because we've opened that up with Fulham only getting the same allocation we have. I'll just double check just in case they...
Yeah, there's an article on the website saying there's still tickets left. I don't think it gives any more specifics than that. It basically says, I think it's the south stand, pretty mainly in the south stands, and also maybe some single seats elsewhere.
Yeah, and look, if you haven't got your ticket yet and you're on the fence, please get on down there. If you've got a couple of mates that come to the odd Reading game, bring them down. You want that wall of noise. You want people to get behind the team and do everything they can to suck the ball into the net. The Reading one, at least. Don't need them doing that for Fulham. Anyway, we will wrap that up there. Thank you very much to everyone who has watched and joined in with the conversation live. Thank you as well to those of you who submitted questions, as usual, to the mailbag. I floated the contact details up in the middle of the show, but I'll read them out because this will be on the podcast feed. As usual, it's facebook.com/TileLessEnd. We're at the TileLessEnd on Twitter and the TileLessEnd at gmail.com. And if you want to go back and watch this, you can head back to the YouTube channel anytime to take this in and see our lovely faces. Whether we'll be doing this again, I don't know. Hopefully we'll have our usual format behind me in play and a full studio full for a hopeful pre-Wembley special. If not, we will be back talking about the Fulham game and giving a full review of the season. It'll obviously be done on the fly. I don't really want to plan a show yet until I know what's going to happen. But thank you for joining in. Hopefully get some pre-match and post-match instant reaction up from the ground tomorrow. And of course, stay tuned to thetilelessend.com for lots more opinion analysis. And if you haven't read the reports from the first leg, very much encourage you to do so, or read Mark's further reading column as well. Again, very much worth your time. And finally, thank you to those of you who've given your money on patreon.com. Absolutely brilliant efforts all round. It really does go a massive way. I mean, I'll show you behind me. You wonder where your money goes. It goes on things like that. So this week, I have replaced our mic stands. So for those of you who watch our videos and think, oh, I'm sick of those little things getting in the way, here you go. We're mobile now. So there you go. Your money in action. So there we go. Anyway, Mark, more importantly, thank you very much for joining me. Best of luck tomorrow. May the force be with us. And may we be talking about a trip to Wembley very soon.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
at the Tarlhurst End
and facebook.com/thetarlhurstend.